session number 22083, reel 13.
This is the seventh reel of a taped interview with Bill Mitchell in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 11th of the 7th, 2001, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. So tell us, what was to happen next? You didn't go to Japan.
No. Then they started to shift anyone with high points, because everybody was allotted points according to their length of service, where they'd been, what jobs they had been in before they joined the army. And so I was sent back to Labuan, and we used to fill in the time there just playing cards and swimming and all that sort of thing. And one day a chap came up, he said, quick, get up to the Woodley Rim. He said, there's a Catalina going out to Perth sometime today. And he said, you've got pretty high points. He said, you might be on it. So I went up, and I went to headquarters, and unfortunately I didn't get on that plane. And the next day the same thing happened, and I went up, and I was lucky. I got onto a plane that left Labuan at Thursday morning, and we I'm not sure whether we landed at Balikpapan or whether we went straight through to Darwin. I think we went straight through to Darwin, or a place called Wide Bay. It was it'd be west of Darwin, and we had a meal there, and got back on the Catalina. Now we must have stayed one night somewhere, because we left there sometime Friday, and landed at Crawley Bay at 4 o'clock on Saturday morning.
What was it like initially to be in a situation where you're just relaxing at the end of a war, to then fly home and be approaching Perth after having been away at war?
Yeah.
Now the war's over.
Oh, I think it was a bit of a numb feeling, you know. You don't know what you're going to be doing next, sort of thing.
What was Crawley Bay like? Because now it's a sleepy, calm...
No, there was nothing there except the Catalina base. There was a few Catalinas on the water there. I didn't take much notice of it, actually. We got off the Catalina, and they had a bus that picked us up and took us to... where did they take us? They took us to a camp, anyway, and we were waiting for our discharge. We used to get leave every day and go into Perth, and...
was there... a welcoming committee at all?
No, there wasn't a soul there. If I'd have been inclined, I could have gone Ackwilly for 6 months and they wouldn't have known where I was. Nobody expected us. And I'm not sure whether it was a camp at Karakata. At any rate, we went to this camp and reported in, and I think It was, well, we got leave straight away. That right, and I went into the town. I met up with some ex-POWs from Singapore that were in the Changi and those places. And
what did they talk to you about? How had your experience and theirs differed?
No, well, I can't even remember them discussing the war at all. You know, like they were just happy to be back home. I know. I think I've jumped the gun a bit there because I had been discharged and I met up with them. And one of them was getting engaged that night. So after we'd done the pub crawl, because you'd go to one pub and they'd run out of beer, so you'd go on to the next one. And when they run out, you'd go on to the next one sort of thing. And eventually, it came time to the pubs used to close at 6 o'clock, and one of the boys was getting engaged, and they were having a party out at South Fremantle somewhere. So I went along with them, and they had a case of gin, and we were drinking this gin raw out of the bottle, and that's when I woke up the next morning. I was in a sort of a ward. There was four beds in it, one in each corner, and I opened my eyes and I looked over to the bloke, and he was one of the fellas I'd been out with. He said, "You feel like a drink?" I said, "Yeah, I'd love one." I said, "I'm as dry as a chip," and he put his hand under the pillow and pulled out a bottle of gin. I said, "No thanks." I said, and I never drank gin from that day to this. And
what was the feeling of having just survived a war? You'd been injured, but you'd survived it.
Oh. I don't know. I didn't think too much about it. I just thanked my lucky stars that I got out of it.
You mentioned that there was this numb feeling.
Yeah. Well, you didn't. You had never had a motion of any kind, I don't think. You knew it was all over, and that within a few weeks of that, you'd be back into harness and carrying on normal civilian life again.
Well, what was it like then to see that you had to get back into Sibby Street again?
Well,
people talk of the feeling of anticlimax. Was that something that you felt, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I I just took things as they came, you know, like you got used to living from day to day, and that's about what I did, I think.
I've spoken to people and they say that up until that time your life is ordered. Everything you do in the army is controlled by someone else. Then to be in this sort of sense of freedom, how does that affect you, do you think?
Well, I never worried about it. I knew that once I got out, I'd have to go back to work. And
what did you end up doing then?
Well, after I left, I was saying that I woke up in this ward, and I was in the convalescent camp at Point Walter, and these blokes were, that was their home, because they were recovering from their POW experiences. And I went up to the Leopold Hotel, and I walked in the bar, and I ordered a beer, and I drank half of it and couldn't drink any more. And I got on the bus and went into Perth, and I lay in the government gardens on the corner of Barrack and St George's Terrace until the train went out to Kalgoorlie. I went and got my ticket, and then I lay, stayed down in the gardens and in the grass and the sunshine and until the train was due to go out, and I went back to Kalgoorlie. And I had about a week's holiday, doing nothing. Then I went back to the mine. The mine that I had been working on had been closed down. And I went to the main shaft, and the underground manager, he said, "Oh, I suppose you want your job back there, Bill." And I said, "Oh, yeah, I wouldn't mind starting again." I said, "All right." He said, "Start tomorrow if you want it." And I said, "Righto, that'll do." And I went back to work, and I worked two shifts, and I got malaria, and I had finished up in Kalgoorlie Hospital. And while I was there, I thought to myself, "Well, there's got to be something better than mining." And my thoughts went back to the times when I was talking with Howie Wing about getting an orchard on the River Murray. So I got in touch with some people down at Carmel that I used to go down there for holidays before the war.
Carmel's a country town.
Hmm?
Where's Carmel?
It's a little district up between Kalamunda and Pickering Brook. And this person's parents had an orchard, and I asked them if they wanted any hands on it, and they jumped at the chance. So I think I was getting about 7 pounds a week working on the mines, and I was coming back to 5 pounds a week working on the orchard, but it was in the open air, and so I decided I'd come down and get the job. Well, I started work, would have been about 1946, and I worked for a full season on the orchard, and the lad that I was living with, his uncle and auntie had an orchard at Rollystone, and they heard that the person below them wanted to sell out. And Ted said, well, it wasn't big enough for him. He wanted something bigger. And he said he interested in going and having a look at it. So I came down and had a look at it, and I fell in love with it straight away. And I said, this will do me. It was 17 acres, and there was water running out at the rate of about 2,000 an hour on the surface in the middle of summer. And I thought, well, that'll do me, because I'd made the vow that I'd never be short of water again after being in the Syrian desert. And so I started the wheels turning to get it. I had nearly £400 deferred pay the government was holding, and so I applied to get that money, and a friend of mine lent me another $200 and I finished up getting the place for £610.
Been here ever since?
And I've been here ever since. I started on the orchard, but the family grew quicker than the orchard did, so I had to take on a job, and I got a job with, before I started work with CSIRO, I went up to Derby and worked for 6 months on a lead mine, and got a bit of a bank. And I paid me £200 back to the person I borrowed it off. And from then on, I just carried on working, and there was a job advertised at CSIRO in Kelmscott. I think the wages was £300 a year, and so I went and applied for that and got it, and I worked with CSIRO for 23 years, and I finished up a technical officer.
Having left the war, what was the feeling at home in regard to the war having finished? How did the average person see the end of the war, do you think?
it's amazing how quick things got back into the same old order as it was before we went away. I don't suppose things were ever quite the same, because
Did anyone want to talk to you about your experience? Was there anyone that you could share your experience with?
Nobody did ever ask me, I don't think. I've often threatened to sit down and write a book and start, as we did, start from the first I could remember till now, but I never have.
This may help you one day.
Yeah, it probably would. That's what I should do. I should get a recorder like that and just talk into it when I think of things that have... But I could write a book on the experiences around Rolling Stone alone.
You mentioned earlier on that there have been other wars that have come after the Second World War. Did you ever feel as though you wanted to join up again?
No. When the Korean War broke out, there were some of the young bloods that had they'd been in the Army or the Air Force, and they were highly delighted, but it wasn't for me. I wouldn't have been in it.
So how do you think, in looking back, the war has shaped who you are today?
Well, if it hadn't been for the war, I would have probably stayed in Boulder and worked on the mines, and I'd have been where the rest of the blokes are, 6 foot under the ground. All the blokes that I used to knock around were the dead now. I worked in the mines and got miners' phthisis, and I probably would have finished up the same.
So in looking back on your war experience, how would you sum up your time?
Well, in lots of ways, they were great days, you know, because there was everybody lived as though it was going to be the last day of their life, you know, and I don't think I was any different to most of them. One regret is that I never went for rank when I could have. When the opportunity came up to get stripes, it was either me or a bloke that had been a batman all his army career, and I thought, well, I'll give it a go and see if I got the job of being the corporal. So, and I only wish I'd have got that way a lot earlier than I did, because there was a hell of a difference in the pay of a corporal and the pay of a private, something like five bob a day, which was made a big difference in those days. I don't think I'd have done anything different if the time came again. I'd and I was in the same position, I probably would have done exactly the same.
So what's the closeness that you now have with the other chaps that you served with?
Well, my greatest mate, he passed away last year. We were just like brothers. I know we used to bank out, put a few bob in the bank, and I'd get out of the two up, and I usually come out winning a few bob each time, and he finished up coming over from South Australia to live here in WA, and we got together on many an occasion, you know. He was in the Rats and on the committee, and I was on the committee.
How would you rate those friendships that you were made in your service career?
Well, in actual fact, I think he was the only one that I really got thick with. There was one other fella, Tony Schutz. I was very friendly with him. And one other, Alan Matthews. He lost his brother at Alamein the same time as I got wounded. And we keep in touch with one another. When we went up to Darwin and down through the centre, and we went down to the peninsula where he lives and spent a week with him. And he's invited us to go back there again any time we want to go back, but whether I will or not, I don't know.
So the friendships are still pretty close.
Oh, yes, yeah. Oh, dozens of blokes. You know, I met up with several of them over in Brisbane, but I was never as thick with them as I was with Howie, because we were together all the time from Tobruk till the time we went to the Isles and Bowls.
So in summing up, what word would you say in relation to the interview, the conversation that we've just recorded?
Well, it's brought back a few memories. There are a few things that we've missed out on, but nothing of importance, I don't think.
Should we finish it there?
Yeah, I think it'd be a good idea to call it quits.
Thank you very much.
No worries.